Welcome to all of you tonight. As many of you heard, there are people here from all over the world this evening. Obviously, there's a big crowd out there. We welcome all of you. I have been looking forward to tonight. I am a big fan of Dr. Bruce Lipton, and he's going to be interviewed by Dr. Alex Lloyd, the discoverer of the healing codes, and Dr. Ben Johnson, who has 3 medical degrees. And they're going to have a lot of fun together, and we're going to get to participate as listeners. A couple of details. One is that at 10 minutes into the call and 40 minutes into the call, I will come back in and tell you where to get more information about Dr. Bruce Lipton, his books, his website, etc. The reason we do that, there are more people on the line at that time than at any other time. Also, if you cannot be here through the entire call after the first of the year to celebrate 2006, we will put up a page where you can go and get a download or listen to the MP3 of this call and get a download of the transcription of this call. And that will be at thehealingcode.com/Bruce, B-R-U-C-E, for Dr. Bruce Lipton. And his website, where you'll be able to find out more about his books, et cetera, is www.BruceLipton.com. And we will do questions and answers probably for between 70 to 90. I'm sorry. We'll do presentation with questions and answers by Dr. Bruce Lipton, with Dr. Alex Lloyd, and Dr. Ben Johnson for about 70 to 90 minutes. And then we'll open it up for Q&A in case you have questions for Bruce that haven't been answered earlier. So I would like to welcome, first of all, Dr. Alex Lloyd and Dr. Bruce and Dr. Ben Johnson, and I'll let you introduce Dr. Bruce Lipton. Alex and Ben?
Thank you, Don. Thank you. Boy, I have been so excited about tonight. I've been excited about it for years, and I didn't even know about it till a couple of weeks ago. The reason I've been so excited, to me, it's because of what I believe true greatness is. There's a lot of people out there in the world that do maybe what we would call great things. They invent something that's a better mousetrap. They make millions or billions of dollars. They do this, they do that. And that's wonderful, and I applaud those people. But to me, true greatness is someone that takes their intelligence, their giftings from God, their passion, their time, their sweat, and they do something that changes the world for all of us. And there is no one I know of in this field that we could have tonight who would fit that description better than Dr. Bruce Lipton. It was several years ago after I was first I discovered the healing codes, but really it was a gift from God, I believe. And I was, even though I knew it was real and it would change lives, I was searching, struggling for some scientific basis and validation. And a friend of mine sent me a tape that was called The Biology of Belief, and it was a long video. I don't know how long that booger was. It was 2 hours or maybe longer than 2 hours. I couldn't believe they got it all on one video. And I wore that thing out. I watched that thing till it wouldn't run anymore. And every time I saw it, I learned something new. And you can ask my wife, the first several times I watched it, my mouth was just hanging on the floor. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And Dr. Lipton has been an unbelievable pioneer in helping us change our paradigms about life, about health, about success, in however we define success. And I am just so excited to welcome you tonight, Dr. Lipton, to our program. And as we heard and as Don said, we've got people here from all over the world. And that's not a testament to the healing codes. That's a testament to you. And I'm just honored beyond words and humbled for you to join us tonight.
Well, now I have nothing left to say. Well, I'm extremely, extremely taken back because I feel like I'm the student in this whole thing. I mean, it was sort of like when the healing codes were passed down. I was in a biology research laboratory, and the information that came down was the same kind of information, just in the context of biology. So I was much as a person going, oh, wow. Oh, wow. This is amazing, because it was far from anything that I was thinking about in regard to how life worked as a scientist. And so I was completely taken back by this information, and as much like a student as anybody else, just sitting there as this awareness was dawning. So I'm just a lucky boy. I look at that as thinking, because what happened was when this information about this new biology was essentially downloading, it was interesting because I just saw this mystery of life. It was sort of like the curtain pulling back at the Wizard of Oz, and you could see the wizard with all the levers and switches and things going on, and seeing how it worked. And this new science came down, gave inside information about the nature of our lives and how we work and where we're going and what's going on. Stuff that I wasn't brought up with, in the sense of kind of spiritual stuff. I wasn't there. I was teaching biochemistry and genes and science like that, and yet it was a transformative moment, because the science revealed the nature of a spirituality that I wasn't looking for it, B, I didn't have any thought about it being there or not, and when it hit, it was like, oh my God, look at that. That's how it works. And I was so blown away, and then it was fun because I went out and try to tell people about this new science. And it was fun in this regard, because when you understand the new science, you really understand that you really have a lot of power over controlling your health and the character of your life. And it was funny because I would stand up in the front and I'd tell them, if you understand this new science, you will be able to, really take power over your own life. And then the people in the audience would sort of cock their head and look at me and go, you know, Lipton, your life doesn't look that great for a guy who knows these answers, right? And I felt so taken back that I think I said something. I didn't say it exactly the same, but I might as well. It said something like, well, do as I say, not as I do. And then it hit me like with a ton of bricks. And it said, you can become aware of a lot of things, but if you don't take that awareness and actually use it and put it into play like a tool, then it actually doesn't serve you in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing about it was, is there I was giving a lot of Lipton service in this case to the story, and yet I realized at some point my life was going on just as it had been before, in the same uneasiness and the same, oh my goodness, it's just it seems out of control. And they caught me, these people, and I said to myself, I really made a personal commitment, because I thought, my God, here I am talking about this stuff, and I really have no verifiable evidence that anything, it all sounds great on paper, but I just didn't know if it had any practical reality to it. And so I made this commitment to be in integrity. I said, I really cannot continue lecturing on this information unless I really know, the power of it or not. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm just like, cutting my foot off here, in the sense that, well, I'll cancel lectures if I don't have an understanding of this in my life and the way of using it. So the funny part was that as soon as I applied this information, my life changed at that moment of time.
Wow.
And I haven't been able to stay in the box ever since, because I am just so excited and delighted, and I'm very excited and delighted by the audience. And it's interesting because, well, these audience members might find themselves alone wherever they are, or somewhat separated from a lot of people, I realize that they're part of a community. Every one of you that's listening is part of an emerging community that is starting to look for a different truth about the nature and character and quality of life. Because apparently it's just not working that well for a lot of people, and yet we know inherently, intuitively, that there's something more that we just really haven't caught on to. And so I really applaud you because you are making that effort that I said you have to go out and do something. Well, the first effort you're doing is you're making an effort to go out and seek some other information. Mm-hmm. And that ought to be very seriously congratulated in this regard, because we are facing some very stressful times, and there'll be people who are going to float through this period, and there are going to be people who are going to have just terrors through this period. And I really believe that the people on this line will be part of that population that will float through untouched by what's happening in this world, because you'll be walking on a higher plane. So that's really congratulations on that. Now, of course, I'm ready to, after that long preamble,
to get into
the subject matter.
Well, let me say, Bruce, we are so grateful for your wow and that you are out of the box. We are the beneficiaries of that. And let me ask you a question here, and then we'll bring Dr. Ben in for the next question. And all these questions are kind of based out of Bruce's writings, and we're going to tell you how to get any of those and all of those, and I could not recommend those higher. I would buy those, maybe cut down on your grocery bill a little bit if you have to this month. It'll make that big a difference in your life. But we'll tell you about those later. Dr. Lipton, can you
Bruce,
share with us?
How about Bruce, Alex? Okay,
Bruce. Sure. Thank you. What would you say is the fundamental difference between the conventional science that we've all come to learn and the, quote, new biology that you emphasize in your book?
Very fundamentally, the difference is whether one is a victim of life circumstances or one is a participant in unfolding of their own life. And the difference is profound, because if you're a victim, then this is what conventional medicine essentially teaches, is that your body is like a machine, and that if anything goes wrong with its function or its behavior isn't working right, then we have a tendency to blame the machine and say, well, your mechanism doesn't work right. And since your mechanism is programmed by your genes, and apparently you didn't pick the genes that you came with, and you can't change the genes that you came with, so all of a sudden you start to recognize, well, if my life characters are controlled by my genes and I had no selection process in it, I'm just sort of like a victim of heredity. Whatever was passed down, that's what I have to face in this particular life. And then, of course, once you find that you're a victim, you see you're powerless in, like, the unfoldment of your health, let's say, and you say, it's the machine determines whether I'm going to have cancer or I'm not going to have cancer, or whether I'm going to be well or whether I'm going to be sick. And it's sort of, you wake up, you know, like in almost a fear of your own machine breaking down on you. And we offer that as the belief system, the mechanism, that your cells are creating your life, and genes create their characters, and you can't do anything about it. And then there's a side effect of this belief system, because once you believe that your health and your behavior are not anything that you physically can control, then and you're powerless over changing those genes, then you realize that you require somebody to come in and help you fix the machine. Of course, that's what they're trying to get you to believe, that you are a victim, and that the medical situation represents the system that knows all how to fix that thing, and you don't, therefore you need them. And the part is, we lose all these powers, and then we look at life as in so much more of a fearful manner, because of the uncertainty of our health and our survivability and the character of our lives. That's old model. New model. Genes are involved with making the machine. The machine is a vehicle. But the 95% of us or so got here with an adequate genome to have a wonderful, healthy, prosperous existence. And if we start to find that we're failing at that, if we start to find that illness comes in or stress is overcoming us in this, we had the old tendency to believe, well, I can't do anything about it. But now we start to recognize with the new biology that we are a vehicle, but there's a driver. And we left the driver out of the story before and blamed everything on the machine. And the issue is, but now that we recognize there's a driver to the machine, we also recognize there's a thing called driver education. what education did you get to drive this machine of yours? And who is this? This identity is the driver. Is this somewhat of our spiritual or energetic makeup represents this driver? What's the difference? It goes like this. If I sold you my car and it's standard shift and you don't know how to drive stick shift and you drive away and the car is bucking and clanking and going down the street, I think that person does, you know, oof, not, that's not good. And then I get a call back 2 days later. You know that car you sold me? The clutch is bad. And I go, oh, the clutch is bad. Well, I'll tell you what, bring it by. We'll put a new clutch in. So you bring the car back. I put a new clutch in. You drive it away clunking and banging and bucking down the street. And then I get another call about a week later, and you say, you know that clutch you put in? That doesn't work either. And then all of a sudden we realize, chronic clutch dysfunction. And what we have to do is we go to the parts store, which is called the pharmacy, and we keep replacing these clutches. And all of a sudden there's a point that said, however, I've been blaming the machine and I've been blaming the clutch, when the reality was, if you see how you're driving, you're not driving correctly. If I teach you how to drive with a clutch and drive, then that same clutch could last you 100,000 miles. And so the point was, well, wait a minute. Coming to human health, the medical profession says it's the machine. Anything wrong with it, it's the machine. By the chemicals, by the drugs, it's the machine. And yet, what we're beginning to see in the new biology is it is a machine. And the important point, 95% of us got machines that should drive beautifully when you get it off that assembly line and last you a lifetime. If it's not working, then before you blame the machine, we might have to look at the way you're driving. And that all of a sudden gives you power, because if you change the way you're driving, you can enhance the vitality and livelihood of the mechanism called the body. So the difference between the two is the medical approach suggests you're a victim and that they have the chemicals to fix you. The new approach says is you're the driver, there is responsibility, but when you know how to drive it, you'll have carefree riding for the rest of your existence on the road.
Wow.
Well, I'm going to interrupt and give Bruce's website address. I highly recommend you go get a copy of his book, Biology of Belief. I own two copies. I bought one copy, and then they came out with a special and had a number of free bonuses to it that I wanted. Again, Bruce's material primarily. So I bought another copy to get the specials, and I'm going to give one of them away. But anyway, it is a wonderful book. There are also videos and other resources on his website. It's www.brucelipton.com. That's B-R-U-C-E, L is in lamb, or Larry. Actually, Ben, you ought to do this. You're better with the phonics, the alphabet, than I am. LIPTON.com. If you
like
scroll
Lipton
down
tea,
to,
right?
I'm sorry, what?
Like Lipton tea, right?
Lipton tea. Thank
same
you, Alex.
Way, same way.
Yes.
And I just want people to know that there are free articles and references to get information right off the website. So it's not all a money situation at all. It's actually information is available. Download it.
Yeah, but the book is excellent. They ought to buy it. And you scroll to the bottom of the page, you select the Biology of Belief link, and it'll take you to another page. You can find out more about the book. They've also got free audios up there that you can listen to Bruce talk about the book, a lot of the information in the book. Bruce is a very giving person. He doesn't hold back in the hopes that you're going to buy the book, but I highly recommend that you do. And also we'll have a transcript of this call and an MP3 of this call available for free at the start of 2006 sometime that you'll be able to find at thehealingcode.com/Bruce, B-R-U-C-E. And that will be available for free after the first of the year. Now, Ben, would you get in here and speak for a bit?
Thank you, Don. You know, I think all of us listening to the call right now, Bruce, are having kind of one of those aha moments, where we don't have to be a victim. We don't have to play the victim. So we can kind of think of our cells as miniature people and the cells of our body as a community.
Yes. Should I expand on that?
Yes.
Well, okay, first of all, this is this wonderful opportunity to recognize that when we look at ourselves in the mirror, we see ourselves as a single individual. And yet, as a biologist, I have to say, that's a big misperception, because when I look at the body, I look at it as the nature of the cells. The cells are the living things that make us. That, in fact, a body contains upwards up to 50 trillion cells. Every cell is an intelligent living organism, because my research was taking cells out of humans and cloning them in petri dishes and study how they live and grow and study their life. And this is where, when I started to get the understanding, the cells taught me the most fundamental lessons of life. And it's interesting because, as I said, we see ourselves as this singular one entity, when in fact we actually represent a community where every cell is a living entity that's tuned in to the, like a central broadcast in the community to hold all the cells together. So all the cells are essentially listening like to CNN. They're all listening to the news, but that news is coming from what we call the central nervous system in the mind. And why that's relevant is, just as much as we sit around and watch the TV or listen to the radio and watch the news, and sometimes we get all nervous and all excited and concerned, and sometimes we're happy and sometimes we're afraid, the cells in our body are doing exactly the same thing as you, except that in this case, your mind is the broadcast medium. It's the equivalent of the government telling the people, okay, you know, here's what's going on. And these cells live in your body in this community. And the nature of health is, when we're really healthy, there's wonderful harmony in the community. But when we start to get in a state of stress, we start causing the cells to break apart, and the harmony, the community starts to really lose the harmony. When the community loses harmony, it starts to express a state of dis-ease. It's not working smoothly again. So now we stand back and we look at ourselves and we say, number one, that we are a community, and that the health of our community is based on the information that's being shared among the cells in the community. But the information that's being shared is information derived from our thoughts and our mind and our behaviors. And all of a sudden it says, then when you pull back, you have to say, are you in your thoughts giving an information that life is good and life is healthy and we're real happy to be here and God bless all you cells in there for working and doing your job and life is working beautifully? Or are you looking out the world thinking, oh my God, that's not going to work, and geez, I don't think that can happen, and I'm afraid that this may not work? And the reason why, the difference is because one side is a side that sustains happiness, growth, and community, the belief that we're in the right direction and life is good. But if we start sending messages that life is against us and that we're victims and we can't do all these things, the cells inside are being bombarded with this information, and the information is converted into biochemistry. So your thoughts might be these, like, energy things going on in your head, but the thoughts are converted into signals that are sent to the cells to coordinate their functions in regard to what the thoughts are. So a simple understanding can be done like this. When we live in our communities, and back in the 50s, we were afraid that the Russians were going to bomb us. And so what we did is we built bomb shelters. And these were supposed to be used in case we saw a need to protect ourselves. Now, I want you to understand that a community of people and the communities of cells are very parallel expressions. So if I talk about a community of people and the responsiveness, it's really the same thing applies to the cells. So I go like this. I say, imagine a beautiful day. It's a spring and the sun is out and things are growing and the factories are working and making things and the schools are going on, education's going on, and businesses are open. I would say, when looking at this community, I say, look at this community. It's in growth. It's on a move. It's spring. Everything is beautiful. And I would say that this is a growth situation. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of that day, an air raid siren goes off. And when the air raid siren goes off, everybody runs to the bomb shelter, because that was our training. And in that bomb shelter, that was going to be a place of protection. So now I say, okay, wait. Before the bomb air raid alert, the community was in a state of growth. But when the air raid alert went off, the people left their jobs, their classrooms, or wherever they were, and they went into the bomb shelters. Now, the simple question is, well, if everybody left their job and they're in the bomb shelter in protection, then what happened to growth? And the answer is, well, nothing is growing. Everything stopped. When you're in protection, you wall yourself off. When you're in growth, you're open up to the community. So the interesting fact goes like this. If it's just an air raid test, that meant everybody left the job for 10, 15 minutes. They went to the bomb shelter. The all clear came. And then they got up and they went back to work again. So it was like a long extended coffee break or something. But now here's the problem in today's world. The way that the fears are coming in our world today, we sort of like are like that community. The fears generate the air raid siren. We run into the bomb shelter, but here's the problem. There is no all clear. And we stay in the bomb shelter, and we wait, and we wait, and we wait because we're afraid, because we know that we need protection. And the fact is this, now the simple question is this, how long can you wait in the bomb shelter? And the answer is there's a finite time, and the reason is this, how much food have you stored in that bomb shelter? The point is, when you run out of food, well, where do you get food? From growth. Yeah, but there has been no growth, because when everybody's in the bomb shelter, they're in protection. And so the point is, if you stay in fear, you inevitably die because you're shutting off your growth mechanisms. And that happens to the cells because when our thoughts are generating a fear of that something's going on, the cells are afraid because if you're afraid, they obviously, their life is in jeopardy as well. So the cells get into a protection response. And as we now recognize that our thoughts that generate, if we have a perception that there's something to be afraid of, then our thoughts will send chemicals to the body to coordinate the response and put us in a protection response. And that protection response is, the primary thing it does is it causes the cells to shut off the growth, get into a protection posture, and conserve the energy they have left to run like hell when that fear shows up. And here's the problem. If we do live in fear from day to day to day, then the signals sent through the chemistry of our body shut down the growth processes, and they also, and this is an unfortunate side effect, but they also shut down the immune system. And you say, well, why would they do that? That's protection. And the thing is, yeah, but if your fears are from the outside, then the immune system is only a protection on the inside of the body. And so if you are being afraid that an Al-Qaeda is chasing you, you don't care if you have a bacterial infection at that moment. You know, that's like, I sort of ask you an economic question. If I had to fund the immune system to take care of a bacterial infection, and I also have to fund my arms and legs, my fight and flight, to run away from the Al-Qaeda, and I'm asking you, well, how much of the money do you want to put in to fight the bacterial infection while you're being chased? And the answer is, I'd rather wait on the bacteria, and if I escape the Al-Qaeda, I'll get back to the bacteria later. And this is actually what happens in our bodies. Our immune systems actually are shut down when we are in fear. For the reason is, if we're in fear, and I'm talking about fear of the threats in the outer world especially, that shutting down the immune system isn't a conservation effort that saves energy to be used in that fight or flight that you're anticipating. And so the more fear you're in, two things are happening. One, the more fear you're in, the more you shut down the growth, which is keeping you alive, maintaining your body, you know, fixing and repairing the stuff that needs it. If you shut down your growth, those go on hold for a while. And at the same time, you've taken the funding away from the immune system, and all of a sudden you're open now for an attack from the inside. And so all of a sudden you start to see, oh, my goodness, I have this community. I am talking to myself about what I think about the world. If I see the world as a scary place and the fears, and all you have to do is watch the TV, read the newspapers. I mean, if there's not one fear, it's another one. Now they're telling you about this bird flu. It's a fear. And all the issues are this. The more fear you're in, the more you are diminishing the power of your entire biology because protection, as the concept implies, means you must close yourself down. And when you do that, your life functions start to go off. You're not sustaining your life. So the point is, the new biology says this: you have a vehicle, you drive it. If you live in fear, you cause the maintenance of the system to be shut down as you prepare for your survival mechanisms, which are fight or flight, that you are also shutting down your immune system, and in the process become susceptible to things that you would not normally be susceptible to, and then you start to express an illness, not because that illness can take advantage of you, because if you were not in fear, your immune system would be fully working to its innate capacity, God-given, and allowed us to be here a million years before there were doctors. That immune system kept everyone alive. We look at it today as a frail system, and that is like, if it's frail, it's because we made it so.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Bruce, you state that the conclusions of conventional science are flawed, and I thought this was so interesting, because they're based on three assumptions that may not be valid any longer. Could you expand on that some, please?
Yeah, it's very interesting because science has built a whole mountain of beliefs, built facts on top of facts on top of facts. And somewhere during that building of the mountain, we begin to buy some facts that apparently are not necessarily true. But if we bought them at the time, then we just continue building our belief system on facts that may not be accurate. Well, we now know there are three fundamental belief systems upon which conventional medicine is built that are flawed. And the flaws are so profound that it really causes us, and to those that are being responsible, to back off of the current beliefs and say, wait, let's incorporate these changes and see how these changes, what direction they take us in. The three beliefs that are flawed, number one, the belief of medicine is based on Newtonian physics. Newtonian physics, the mechanisms of Isaac Newton, reveal that the universe is a machine made out of physical parts. And the significance when that Newtonian belief is discussed is that everything in the world is part of this machine, including the human body, including all the living organisms. The rocks and the living organisms are all made out of matter. And according to Newtonian physics, to understand how the world works, all you have to study is the matter. That the concept of invisible forces and energy are not relevant to conventional Newtonian physics, because it's basically, no, it's the pieces, the chemistry, the atoms, they matter, but not invisible stuff. So conventional world chemistry says, how does the body work? It's a machine made out of chemicals. The chemicals are like gears in a clock. The chemicals engage, and then as a result of the chemicals doing their thing, then you have respiration, you have digestion, you have movement, you have all the characters of life. So the belief system says, only study matter and don't pay attention to the invisible stuff. The new physics, which was established in 1925, completely undermines that belief by saying, well, we thought that the world was made out of particles like marbles called atoms. When they started to look inside the atom to see what the atom was made out of, they found that the atom was made out of invisible forces, energy. Well, this becomes really important, because if atoms are made out of energy, and atoms make molecules, and molecules make cells, and cells make people, at what point did it become matter, in one sense? Everything is fundamentally energy. Why is energy relevant? Well, energy is a more powerful way of giving shape to matter than matter bouncing around and tumbling together to form something by itself. Energy fields. I'll give you a simple example. I sprinkle iron filings on I take a piece of iron with a file, and I file the iron, and I get these little tiny particles of iron, and I put them in a salt shaker, and I sprinkle them like salt on a piece of paper, and they bounce all over the place randomly. And I say, well, okay, wipe that off. Let's sprinkle it again. And I sprinkle a pile, and it's random piles of iron grains. And every time I do this, I get random piles of iron grains. But I say, okay, this time, before sprinkling the iron grains, put a magnet under the table. And now when I sprinkle the iron filings, they don't fall randomly. They start to form the shape of a magnetic field. And the point about this is I say, okay, well, throw away the filings and do it again. Guess what? The iron filings form the same magnetic field. And so that a shape is formed. And the form, the shape didn't come from the iron filings. The shape came from the iron filings interacting with the invisible field. So that the field is responsible for giving shape to the matter. Well, the interesting thing about it is in physics we talk about the invisible moving forces as energy. But it's interesting because in ancient times, spiritual people said, oh, the invisible moving forces that give us the character of our lives, that was called spirit.
Wow.
And the fact is, yeah, you know what? The same word, the same definition, spirit and energy, same definition.
Hmm.
Now, you could give it a name or you could give it that name, but on the level of the mechanism, energy gives shape to matter. Why is it relevant? Because energy is part, our thoughts are energy, for example. Our thoughts are like magnets that shape the matter of our bodies. And why is this relevant? Because quantum physics has revealed beyond a question, and in fact it was just an article of, in July in the journal Nature, which is the, one of the most prestigious scientific journals, from a guy deep in the heart of conventional academia, a physicist, a chair, he has a appointed chair in the Department of Physics, is Dr. Richard Hart. And he wrote this one-page essay that it was titled The Immaterial Universe. And he wrote, and after he described the nature of quantum physics, he said, we haven't brought this into our worldview. We talk about it like physics, just talk about, oh, in physics research we'll use this theory. But what he's talking about is, these theories have proven to be more accurate than any theories ever tested by science, and they don't apply to the experiments in a laboratory. They apply to everything in life. And he was writing about the immaterial universe. Let me just tell you the last two sentences in the article. In this conventional science journal, the article wrote, the universe is immaterial. It's mental and spiritual. Live and enjoy. And this is coming from the heart of, you know, mainstream academia. Why is it relevant? Because it says when we start to bring this new physics in, we start to look at the world from that perspective rather than the mechanistic way that the medical doctors look at your body as a machine made out of chemicals and like gears. The new physics says, first of all, your body is made with a lot of mentation and spirit. And why is that relevant? Because these are where your beliefs about life actually shape your life. And that becomes a level of physics. So point, conventional medicine, relying on outdated physics, and actually is technically no longer scientific for a simple reason. In sciences, the sciences are built like one science on top of another, a foundational science that sets some rules, and then another science extending from that. So like at the bottom of our building, this, let's say, is physics, because physics means mechanisms. That's why they say quantum physics or quantum mechanics. Newtonian physics, Newtonian mechanics. Mechanics is physics, the mechanisms of the universe. So bottom building, the mechanisms. The next floor up, chemistry, where the mechanisms shape the physical world as we see it. The next floor up is biology. And the next floor up is psychology. Well, the relevance is, in 1925, physics changed their belief system about the universe from a material universe to an energy-based universe. And the significance by law in this building of science is that if a science at a lower level changes its belief system, every science built on top of that must change its belief system to accommodate the new understanding at the lower level. What's the point? 1925, physics said the universe is based on energy, not matter. And it's now 2005, and conventional medicine is still basing a universe on matter and has not really brought in the nature of quantum mechanics and therefore is no longer scientific. And the relevance of quantum mechanics is when you really recognize that when the physicist is talking about energy and the spiritualist is talking about spirit, mechanistically, you're talking about the same thing. And so we left the spirit more or less out of the biology. That's one of the issues. The next fact is that we believe that genes control life. And this is an interesting thing because it was an assumption because before they found the genes, they already believed that they were going to look for something that was made out of matter that controlled the character of life. Well, this is not really good science, meaning science is supposed to ask the question and let the universe reveal the answer. If you already tell the universe what you're looking for before you do the experiment, that's not real science. And so basically, the belief that was handed down, especially from Charles Darwin on, where life is controlled by the hereditary traits passed from parent to child, and then variations, mutations lead to variations in life. The relevance about that is that put us on the track of looking for those material things that control traits, and we ended up with genes, and everybody bought the story because that's what they were looking for, but then they leave out some kind of simple observation like this, which is also kind of thing that I used in my own research, except it was done, the first experiments were over 100 years ago. The genes or the DNA of the cell are present inside the cell in a structure called the nucleus. And if you read the science textbooks from grade school on up, they talk about the nucleus as being the equivalent of the brain of the cell, because the brain being the decision maker, that they say the nucleus is the decision maker because it's got the genes, and we bought already the story that genes control life. Genes are in the nucleus being like the collection of all the genes would be the equivalent of the brain, and that's what we teach. There's a problem with that, and it goes like this. By logic, if you take the brain out of any living organism and throw it away, that organism will die. That's the logic of that statement. Well, here's the point. If the genes really control life and the genes are in the nucleus, and we call the nucleus the equivalent of the brain, if you take the nucleus out of the cell and throw it away, then by all consideration, the cell should die because it's lost the genes, it's lost its brain. And 100 years ago, they did this experiment. Guess what? The cells didn't die. Many of them lasted for a month or two. And the point was, wait a minute. The cells aren't just sitting there. They're eating, digesting, they're breathing, they're moving around, they're communicating with other cells, they're avoiding toxins in the environment. They're very busy little sentient beings. And the question is, well, how can they do that without genes? If genes control the life, the question is then, what's controlling their life? And that is, aha, it's not the genes. You can remove the genes from a cell and the control mechanisms are still there. The life still is present in the cell. The cell does all of its functions and coordinates them and carries out a surviving expression of life. Point. If a cell is doing that without genes, then you must stop right away and say, well, apparently the genes can't control life because if they're gone and life still has control, then it's not the genes. And then you have to start to find out what it is. And, of course, that's where my research started to go in that direction. But it was also at the same time the conventional scientists were still believing in the genes. They were doing the Human Genome Project. And the Human Genome Project was to list all of the genes that should be present in a human. So based on their belief that genes control life, they had a number of genes they were expecting to find to fulfill their belief system. They had to have about 140 to 150,000 genes to make a human being. And the results of the Human Genome Project, two or three years ago now, the Human Genome Project expected to find 140,000 genes to make a human, find that a human has approximately 25,000 genes. Over 100,000 genes are missing if the model was right. But the answer, of course, is, well, how can the model be right? There's only about 25,000 genes. The answer is the model was wrong. And so there's a comeuppance here due that the belief that we hold and still teach in school that genes control life, that people read in the newspaper every day, there's articles, oh, we're looking for the gene that controls this and the gene controls that. And the reality is they're still saying that, and they already know scientifically genes do not control life. And that is a very important point because the public is not aware of this fact. They are still in belief that genes are controlling their day-to-day existence and that cancer is due to a gene behaving badly. And the fact is these are not true. that we actually control the genes with our thoughts and our beliefs and our mind and our behaviors. We control the genes. And science, the leading edge of science, knows this. It's called, it's a new field. Instead of genetic control, which literally says control by genes, which is the conventional belief system, leading edge science now recognizes a new thing called, listen to the words, epigenetic control. And epi means above. So if I say epigenetic control, that literally says control above the genes. And this is the new understanding. There's a genetic code that controls the genes, but it's not DNA. And it deals with perception of the environment. And the relevance about this is the old belief, you want to change your genes or their behavior, you have to change, physically change your genes or engineer new genes. The new understanding, you want to change the genes or the behavior or character of that system, you don't have to change the genes, you just have to change your perceptions. And that,
Dr. Lipton, I was
Bruce.
Looking.
Thanks.
I was looking at my daughter's eighth grade science book last year, and it was all Newtonian physics. You're exactly right. That's still being taught out there every day. But let's go on about perception, because you really emphasize fundamental units of awareness are actually molecular units of perception. So let's talk about perception and
okay.
how they relate to our beliefs.
Okay,
and Bruce, before you do that, let me give out your website again. We do it at these times because statistically there are more people on the call at this time than at any other time, although for this one I'm not certain. We have 117 more people on the line than we have lines for.
So
that's got a lot to do with perception. We have 600 lines. So to get more information about Bruce's information, you've got free articles on his website, free audios on his website. You'll also find a link to his book, Biology of Belief. You've got videos and audios that I highly recommend. I'm a big, big fan. I've owned them. I've watched them. I thoroughly enjoy them. I highly recommend them. Again, the website is www.BruceLipton.com is in Lipton T, BruceLipton.com. Also, we will make a free transcript available probably shortly after the first of the year in a free MP3 that you can listen to this again and send your friends to, and that will be at www.thehealingcode.com/Bruce. And we'll probably set up another one that's /Lipton, just in case you can't remember one. Remember the other. It'll be in both places. And now, Bruce, can you take it, or does
We were about to talk about perceptions and how they relate to our beliefs. Bruce, would you share that with us?
Yes. Now, the old belief system said that genes control what goes on in life, and yet we just realized that you can remove the genes from the cell and the control is still present. So somehow or other, the cell is responding to the needs that the environment demands. And so do we. So I want to, again, if I'm talking about cells, I'm talking about people. It's still the same thing. So let's say this. When you walk outside and the weather is really cold, the sensation of cold is a perception. I perceive it's cold out. That perception of cold causes my metabolism to change. So the environmental signal of cold causes my internal metabolism to activate the switches and warm up my biology to keep my body temperature at the right temperature. And yet, if I walk out the door and it's hot out, then the sensation of hot, the perception of hot, causes a change in my internal biology that I start to sweat and I start to change the cooling character of my body to drop my temperature so I don't overheat. The point about it is this. The control of my body functions like that are not controlled by genes. Genes have nothing to do with it. It's controlled by what the environment says. So, again, if I perceive it's cold out, I raise my body temperature. And the interesting thing is, then how you see the world causes your biology to make a response to keep it alive in the world. So that as cells see their world, they see the chemistry and what's going on inside the body as signals, just like broadcast, and they respond to the chemicals and change their biology according to the chemicals, and the chemicals are connected to our thoughts. So if we tell the body, for example, that it's cold out, and it's not really cold out, but we believe it's cold out. So like somebody hypnotized me and they said, Bruce, it's like 10 degrees below zero in here. And I actually perceive that it is. I think it is. I mean, I'm hypnotized, so I'm thinking it's really cold. I will cause my body temperature to heat up even though the room temperature was nice and warm. And what was the point? The cells respond to what I think, whether I perceive the actual truth or a distortion, my cells still respond to what I think. So we hopefully see the world with clear vision. But there are people who perceive the world with skewed vision. So I'll give an example. A person with anorexia looks at themselves in a mirror, and they see themselves like in a funhouse mirror, like their body looks really big and fat. And the reality is everyone is looking at this person and thinking, my goodness, this person is skinny and almost near death. They're so thin. And yet the person with anorexia looks in the mirror and they don't see skinny. They see a big bloated person. So what are their, that's their perception. What's their perception? They're fat. Is it true? No. But the cells don't know that. The cells are just getting the message from the brain. So if the brain says, I'm fat, then the cells will go through the effort of losing more weight. And here's the problem. If the perception was off, the cells didn't see it was off. They just bought whatever the mind said. And so the point happens is that if the mind says we're overweight, the cells say, oh, okay, without any more instruction, the mind is the boss, the mind is the government, mind says lose weight, and they will do that to the extent they will actually kill themselves. And the point is this. The biology is not programmed ahead of time by genes. The biology has to continuously adjust itself because the world is always changing. So you can't be pre-programmed because who knows what the events of the world are going to be. So it works differently. The body is designed to adjust itself to the response to the environment. But the response is generated by the mind, which interprets the environment. So if the mind interprets the environment correctly, then the biology does the appropriate physiology and metabolism and everything to stay alive. But if we have a misperception, when we read the environment and we get it wrong, the cells respond to the wrong information. They don't see the real environment. They only see what I send. So my perceptions control my biology. Sometimes my perceptions are right. And sometimes my perceptions are not right. But whether they're right or they're not right, it's the perceptions still control the biology. So what's the point? Perceptions can be right. Perceptions can be wrong. So in a sense, truthfully, the word perception can be replaced by the word belief. If I believe this is so, this is what I'm going to tell myself. So the anorexic believes they are fat and will tell themselves to get thinner. Even though the truth is, as everybody else can see, that's a belief that's not correct. And yet the cells will respond to that. So the point is, we respond to life with our beliefs of what we expect is going on and what we believe we should do. And if our beliefs are inappropriately programmed, they can limit our powers or interfere with our health or cause us to take the wrong biology, and they can cause a cancer, for example. This is what we now recognize, that we used to think, for example, cancer was primarily caused by genes, but even the American Cancer Society, after about 50 years, and I don't know how many millions and hundreds of millions or billion dollars they put in looking for cancer genes, just a couple of months ago, the American Cancer Society came out with a broad, flat statement, which was surprising. It's a conservative statement, but I'm still surprised they came up with this number. 60% of cancer is totally avoidable by changing lifestyle and diet. Hmm. And why is this relevant? Because this is a shift from the old biology that says you're a victim of cancer, it happens to you, to a new biology that says, my goodness, we're involved with the creation of the cancer. And why is that relevant? Because if I'm a victim, then I'm a victim and I can't do anything about it. If I'm involved with the creation, then if someone will show me, you know, a way of making a better creation, then I can create a better life. So, for example, the healing codes can show you a better way to perceive life that will enhance your cells' vitality rather than threaten them and put in beliefs that are incorrect, because the cells are going to respond to those beliefs, correct or incorrect. And that's why if we start to adjust our lives, we get the power back. That we lost the power primarily because people told us a belief that's not true. And that belief, you're a victim. That's not true. But if you believe you're a victim, you will make it true in your biology just as much as that anorexic believes they're fat. They're going to adjust their biology to that belief. And so all of a sudden it says, difference, again, main difference, old biology, you're the victim, new biology, you have the opportunity to change your beliefs, attitudes, and the way you drive that vehicle. And in doing so, you are offering yourself an opportunity for healing. And this is very interesting because this involves the concept of stem cells. And I worked on stem cells. Well, everybody thinks stem cells are a hot, brand new thing. Oh, stem cells are just the newest thing. My first experiments with stem cells were in 1967. Almost 40 years ago, I was growing stem cells. And my research at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine, where I was teaching in medical school but also doing work on cloning stem cells, I was working on these stem cells. And to me, the big joke today is the belief that people are given that apparently they have stem cells but they don't work, and that we have to give them to the research scientists and the pharmaceutical industry, and they will find chemicals and drugs to make these work. And the interesting thing that I laugh at from my perspective and dealing with stem cells all these years is a joke like, well, what do you think? God gave you these stem cells and you can't use them, and he just gave them to you to hold on to them until the pharmaceutical company could figure out how to make them work? And the reality is, you got stem cells. And these stem cells are present, and I don't care what age you are on the other end of this phone, you have stem cells, which are the equivalent of embryonic cells. They're scattered throughout your body. Their function, to replace and repair and maintain that body like a healthy, young, new kind of body. And the issue about that is, but people don't repair themselves well. They get sick and they can't seem to overcome this stuff. And then we're looking like, well, my goodness, maybe your stem cells are, you know, you got a problem with them, because obviously nobody's stem cells seem to be working. And here's the problem. If you believe you can't heal yourself, that is a perception. Now, it's not a correct perception, but as I said, if that's a perception, that's what the cells are going to respond to, correct or not correct. It's a belief. If you believe you can't heal yourself, then you will negate the ability of your own stem cells to repair your body right now. And why this becomes relevant is because we've been programmed as victims, and we believe that our health is out of our hands. And it's like, this is the farthest thing from the truth. You have stem cells, and those stem cells can renew your entire life. And why aren't they renewing your life? Because you have a belief that you can't. And here's from a guy who was not raised in the Christian tradition. I stand here and say, isn't it interesting that one of the comments that Jesus made, he said you could renew your life with your beliefs. Mm. And the point is, biologically, today, that is an exact truth. And that if you change your beliefs to bring in the fact that you can heal yourself, that you're not a victim, you can change that perception and then enhance and engage those stem cells which are waiting in your body and have been since you were born to work for you to repair and replace and change and build any of the systems you need to have built up in your life. And the problem is, it's a perception that we are not capable of healing ourselves. It's a perception that's promoted very interestingly during our very earliest days of our lives, in our youngest, when we were infants, because that's when we caught the belief that every time we got sick, most of our parents, when we were very young, would, oh, Johnny's sick, we have to take him to the doctor. Or Mary's got a cold, we have to take her to the doctor. The point about this, if this is what we heard when we were kids, that was part of a programming that said, you will not be able to heal yourself until you go to the doctor. And the thing was, it's interesting, because it didn't say the doctor was going to heal you. It just said all you had to do was go to the doctor, then you would heal yourself. And if you think about the funny part of this, how many people get better on the way to the doctor? Without even having seen the doctor, they're getting better. Why? Because they've made the step. And the step was, you were already innately able to heal yourself, but you said you had to go to the doctor first. So you go to the doctor, and on the way, you're already engaging it, you already start to get better. And that is, again, an enhancement of showing you how your perceptions, how you see life, change your biology, and that if we get a hold of and honor our own perceptions and change the way we may have been misprogrammed to see life, then we are powerful enough to return back and do the miracles of regenerating our lives and renewing our lives and all the other miracles that we heard about that we told that we could do, but we failed to believe that. And it's interesting because I didn't come from that background, but then all of a sudden my science, I came through it to science. It says it's this belief that controls that. And all of a sudden then when I went back and then I heard those phrases about renewing your life with your belief, or do you believe you can be healed? If I remember correctly, and I may have it quite wrong, but Jesus would always ask the question, do you believe you can be healed? Because if the person said no, then he really wasn't able to help them. They were healed by their faith that they could get healed, which is a belief.
Bruce, this seems like a wonderful place to ask you to expound a little bit on the significance of conscious parenting. I have a 12-year-old and a 6-year-old, and when I saw your video about conscious parenting, it just knocked my socks off, and it's been a real help to me as a parent in raising my children. Could you speak for a few minutes about conscious parenting in relation to what you've just been talking about?
Oh, absolutely, and it's so important because even myself, my daughters are really a lot older now, but once I understood this, I had to go back to them and say, oh, my goodness. See, I became aware of the fact that the things that I was doing while you were young kids were influencing how you perceive life, even though you didn't know you were getting that as a download. And so here's how the story goes. Perceptions control life. If you perceive it's cold out, you change the metabolism, etc., as I said. Where do you get your perceptions from? Well, some of them are built in. Some of them are instincts. So, like, the idea is if you put your hand in the fire, your muscles will automatically jerk that hand right back out of the fire. You didn't have to learn that. That was built into the system. That's called a reflex. You just know how to do that. Here's many very important reflexes. I'll give you another example. All children that are at the moment of birth, they could be born underwater, and the child will come out of the birth canal and actually swim like a dolphin and come up to the surface of the water and take its breath on a natural, just like a natural instinct. It is a natural instinct, in fact. All mammals, it doesn't make any difference if they've ever been in the water, all mammals know how to swim.
Wow.
So that's an instinct. And it's very interesting because in a moment we'll get to the question is, well, if all mammals know how to swim, then how come we have to put so much effort in teaching Johnny how to swim when he's 5 years old? But before I get into that, let me give you another one because they're all parallel understandings. We are all instinctually able to heal ourselves. That's built into the system. The question is, if we're all able to heal ourselves, then how come we have so much trouble healing ourselves? And actually, relates to the same reason why Johnny can't swim, even though he was instinctually given that as birth. And it goes like this. We get those instincts, and we're born with them. So we're already born with abilities, okay? But the most things that we do in life, we acquire how to live in a culture, how to live in a community, how to live in a family. There are rules, there are regulations, and you have to learn all the proper perceptions and responses to how to maintain this community. So here's what is this understanding. The human brain, when it functions, has a lot of electrical activity, and they call this electrical activity, you can read it using what is called EEG, electroencephalograph, where you put wires on a person's head and you read their brain activity. in adults, we have a whole range of activity, very low activity when we're sleeping, and very high activity when we're very busy, engaged, and focused. And we go up and down during the day, high and low, high and low. But when they looked at children, they found that children don't have that whole range of activity. That for the first 2 years, the child's brain activity, the electrical activity, is in the lowest state called delta. It's the lowest frequency. Adults, when they're in a delta state, when adults are in that state, they're essentially sleeping. Well, a child less than two is essentially in delta. It doesn't mean it's sleeping, though. The child is sort of observing the world, but because the brain part, the output parts that control the muscles and the movements and the voice and all that aren't developed yet, the child can see what's going on and take it in, but it doesn't have any coordination to respond, so it's sort of like observing without participating. It's in delta. From 2 until 6, the child's brain activity ramps up to the next higher level, which is called theta. And when we're in theta, we're almost asleep and awake. Theta is when you're actually mixing the dream world and the real world. I'll give you an example. If you set the alarm clock and it starts to go on with the radio and you're still dreaming and the radio starts, the radio's in the real world, you're in the dream world, but there are sometimes that the whatever's playing on the radio can be incorporated into the dream world, so you aren't fully awake and you're mixing the two worlds together, the dream and the real world. This is what actually where children between 2 and 6 spend most of their time, because this is that area of play where they have like a lot of imaginary friends and imagination, that a broom is a horse, or, you know, mud pies are real. They blend these together, the fantasy. Well, that's where a child is 2 till 6, theta. The next higher level of activity is called alpha, and that's actually calm consciousness, being aware of what's going on, consciousness. And the child reaches that at about 6 and then advances to the next level of focused electrical activity in the brain called beta, which is like focused consciousness, like working in a classroom in a school and taking notes, okay? So we can see these ranges that go the lowest delta and then the next one theta and then alpha, where we become more conscious of what's going on, and then beta, where we become very focused. And we find that a child from 0 to 6 is primarily in delta and theta. Why that's relevant is it turns out those brain activities are the same levels of activities that a brain expresses when a person is hypnotized. So to hypnotize you, I have to take you out of consciousness, the higher electrical activity, and drop you into the lower electrical activity where you're not really being conscious, and I'm talking to what is called the subconscious mind, the one that does like the automatic stuff. Why is it relevant? Because a child, between birth and first 6 years of its life, is in this hypnotic trance state of the brain. The reason why it's important is because whatever the child experiences is like a hypnosis downloaded straight into the subconscious, the automatic part of the brain. And so the significance is that a child has been programmed by the brain design to observe the parents for the first 6 years and learn how they respond to everything in life. How your father, if you're a boy, you focus on your father and you try to model everything you see your father do, how he responds to the stimuli in his world, how he talks to a child. It's different than how he talks to the mom, which is different than how he talks to a neighbor, which is different than how he talks to the policeman. And a young infant can actually learn every one of those different nuances. And that what the infant is actually being programmed is how to live in the culture that we live in, which is very complex, all the rules of our culture. It can't be an instinct. It has to be learned. So the nervous system is designed to learn the information as a hypnotic trance. So the child's not even really conscious that it's learning stuff. It's just like you put someone in a hypnotic trance and you say, you have an aversion to smoking or something like that. And when I snap my fingers and you come out, you'll be awake again. But if you get near a cigarette, that automatic program from the subconscious will remember the hypnosis and say, oh, no, I don't like cigarettes. And that's one way of helping people cancel smoking. It's changing that subconscious. Well, here's the point. All of us our subconscious, which runs most of our lives, got its fundamental programs of how to respond to life in the first 6 years of life by observing other people. And we did it by just observing them. We didn't have to go to school to learn it. You saw it once, you downloaded it. So when people grow up, it's very interesting. If you lose your parents after 6 years of age, when you grow up, you will replicate the behavior of your parents, even if you didn't know them any more than that. The first 6 years, that's what you download. And it's interesting because a lot of people don't even, they don't see this behavior because, and this is a catch of the subconscious. When the subconscious is playing its programs, usually the conscious is busy and not observing those programs, so it never sees them. And that's why if you know someone and you know their parents, so you say, let's say you know a woman and you know her mother very well, and you recognize that this woman and her mother share the same behaviors, and you actually happen to suggest to this woman, you know, you're just like your mom. Well, back up, I'll tell you, because some people are like, oh, how could you say that? And what do you mean? They didn't see they're like their mom? And the answer is no. The reason is the behaviors they acquired, they observed from their mother, were downloaded in the subconscious. And when the subconscious was playing those behaviors, the conscious very rarely observed it because the conscious is usually busy thinking about the future or the past, meaning it's not paying attention to all the stuff that's going on. And as a result, the subconscious is running the moment-to-moment show, but it's running it with programs acquired from other people. And this is where the disconnect comes from in our lives because we consciously think, well, I'm controlling my life. This is what I want. Gosh, it's not working. Oh, my goodness, I keep trying to, I should be getting higher salary. I'm really good. I'm such a good person, people, you know, that I should be getting a raise. I should be having more responsibilities. And look, I'm not getting a raise, and I'm not doing that well in my job. And then all of a sudden, there's a tendency to think, well, my conscious mind wants me to be successful, and since I'm not successful, it must be the outside world. I'm a victim of circumstances. And it turns out the problem is that the behavior that you're expressing, and this is a fact and it's the current science, that 95 to 99% of our behavior that we use every day comes from the subconscious mind, not the conscious mind. Fact, the primary programs in the subconscious were programs we got from other people. They're not our belief systems. They're observations of, like, you know, hypnotic observations watching my parents respond. And the problem about it is they control my life. Now I'm 40 years old. Even though I learned something when I was 6, I'm 40. I'm still running from the programs that I acquired before 6. And the issue is, but do I observe that I'm doing these bad behaviors? And I said, no. And the reason, again, is because when we're using them, it's because the conscious is generally busy, so we're on automatic, and it's like push the button. In fact, people talk about the subconscious as like, oh, that guy pushed my buttons. And and what does that mean? Well, something caused me to make this response, and I all of a sudden observed this response, and I didn't like it. Ah, one of the times where consciousness actually caught the fact that when your buttons got pushed, you were engaged in a response that you didn't even really want to do. Why is this relevant? Most of our lives are running from that program that we don't even observe. And the issues are, what are the kind of programs? And here's the sad part. The programs are not just programs how to deal with the family, but they're also programs of who we are. When we're less than 6 and we're in a hypnotic trance, and people like our parents tell us facts about us, they're downloaded into the subconscious mind as facts. So what kind of facts do parents give their kids? Well, I'll give you an example. Go to Kmart near rush hour, and there's a family tagging a whole bunch of kids along, and one of the kids is jumping up and down because it wants some toy, and it's screaming, I want this toy, I want this toy. And the parent says, and tell me, you probably heard this, a parent said to that kid, you don't deserve that, or you're not good enough. Why is it relevant? Just stop for a second and think, if this child is less than 6, and that parent unconsciously said, and this is where conscious parenting comes in, because the parent didn't, if the parent knew that those words were going to be recorded into the subconscious like a tape recording, they would probably have not said that. But not being aware or conscious of what they're doing, they say to the child, you don't deserve that. That I do not deserve is what the child hears in the tape recorder, and that's recorded in the subconscious mind. Now the person is 40 years old, and they're out doing their busy work, and their minds are thinking about all their chores they have to do at home while they're on their job or whatever it is. And that means that most of the job, which actually happens, comes from the subconscious. It's like a tape player. If you know the job, you don't have to think about it. It's automatic. But the problem is when the mind is running automatic, it's got a program from that incident in Kmart that said, you do not deserve. So when I'm not paying attention, my subconscious program is running a program that I do not deserve. And so to manifest that to be real, then I will make stupid errors or mistakes or something, because if my belief is I do not deserve, then my behavior has to be coherent with the belief. If the belief is I do not deserve, then unknowingly I will create a mistake or whatever it is, so that in the end, people look around and say, no, you're right, you really don't deserve this. And it's like, and you're consciously thinking, but I really know I'm better than this. How come I don't get these things? The answer is because when you weren't paying attention, you went on the tape, and the tape you acquired before you were six, and the tape said you do not deserve, so you're spending 95 to 99% of your day operating from a subconscious mind that says a belief that you do not deserve, and when you're not paying attention, you are absolutely sabotaging yourself because you're conforming to the belief. So what's the nature of conscious parenting? Every move and action you do is being recorded by the child and shapes the future life and health of the child. We now realize that almost all the major illnesses that affect us in life, from cardiovascular diseases to cancer to all the other kinds of issues, especially autoimmune diseases, that these diseases have their root in the fetal and neonatal periods of our lives, where we were downloading information from other people. That if the events of that period were not supportive, not healthy, then unbeknownst to us, they were recorded in the subconscious mind. And the rest of our lives, we are playing those negative tapes and behaviors without even being aware. And some people think, well, I can repair that with positive thinking. And it's like, aha, this is the failure of why positive thinking doesn't work. And it goes simply like this. There are two minds, the conscious one, the alert one, the one that's connected with our spiritual identity, that one. And the subconscious mind, which is a tape recorder. It just tape recorded all those experiences. How to drive a car, that's a tape recording. You can drive the car, get involved with somebody with a discussion, that's your conscious mind, and be so involved with the discussion that you look out the window 10 minutes later and realize, oh, I haven't paid attention to the road for the last 10 minutes. And the point is, well, yeah, but you drove the car for 10 minutes, so who drove the car? And the answer is, well, the subconscious knows how to drive the car. It drove the car. But the question then, and this is where this catch comes in, because the conscious mind was busy in the discussion. If I ask your conscious mind, describe your driving that you just did in the last 10 minutes. Describe your driving behavior. And your answer is, well, I didn't. I can't. I was busy in the discussion. I didn't pay attention. And that's like, aha. Yes, the subconscious mind drove the car, and because your conscious mind was busy, you didn't observe the subconscious, so you have no idea the behavior, how you drove the car. I can tell you how to drive the car. You drove the car the way you were trained to drive the car, because it's just the subconscious mind is just a tape player. Whatever you were trained, that's what you will say and do. And so the relevance about this is that the programs by which we drive our vehicles, and as I said, most of the time we're not aware of it, come from the subconscious mind. The conscious mind is the one that's creative that can say, I don't like that behavior, let's do something different. But here's the catch. 95 to 99% of the day we operate from the subconscious mind. That's fact number one. And fact number two, in regard to computer power, you know, like comparing the processing power of the conscious mind to the subconscious mind, the subconscious mind is a million times more powerful an information processor than is the conscious mind. Now, you put those two facts together, and you realize this. 95% of the day, you're operating from a million times more powerful processor called the subconscious mind, which is playing tapes. Many of the tapes were programmed by other people. That means you consciously are running the show less than 5% of the day with a small processor, one millionth the power of the one with the hypnotic programs in it. When you're thinking of positive thoughts, this is interesting in itself. If you're thinking of positive thoughts, you're not really paying attention to what's going on. You're in your mind thinking, okay, I am capable of being more successful. I'm capable of healing myself. I'm having all these thoughts. I'm not even paying attention to what's going on. Interesting point. Well, I'm thinking positive thoughts. My life is actually being run at that moment by my subconscious, which has all the other programs that are leading me down the path of ruin. And so it's funny, I'm thinking positive thoughts with this little tiny processor and the other mind, the subconscious mind, with the programs that are not supportive of me is running 95% of the time with a million times more powerful processor. Quick question, what's the success rate of positive thinking? and it's obvious.
Wow. Bruce, Ben and I were just at one of Harv Eker's big conventions speaking in California. There were about 1,200 people there. And we quoted some of your work. And right in the middle of the seminar, it was totally unscripted. We just quoted Dr. Bruce Lipton, and a spontaneous cheer went up in this crowd of 1,200 people. And I think everyone who's heard tonight understands why. And here's what we want to do. We want to open up for questions now, if that's okay with you, and you can keep going for a little bit longer.
Oh, absolutely. And I just want to say that, while this was not a very heavy scientific talk, everything I said is based on hard science. And the references can be freely downloadable from the website. That, and the references are grouped by topic, like conscious parenting, stress management, or mind, how the mind functions, how genes function, the new thing about epigenetics, so that each topic. So I just want people to know that while I talk off the top like this, it's totally based on about 35 years of hard reported science that are found in articles all over the place demonstrating what the things I just talked about.
And there are many powerful topics that we didn't even have time to get to tonight.
No, we need a good 12 hours.
We'll do that the next time.
Alex, but
yes.
Before we move into question and answer, I would like for, sorry to say, Dr. Lipton, Bruce. There is one thing that I do want you to cover before moving into that, because it's so important in the construct. And by the way, my wife couldn't agree with you more about this, the apple not falling far from the tree, you know. and that is how this translates into, on a cellular level, as far as basic responses. There are three basic responses that you talk about to environmental stimuli, and we can talk about that as a person or ourselves, and it's really important to have those concepts, those three basic responses down so that we understand how things happen.
Okay, when we acquired perceptions, and we were very young, we acquired perceptions meaning about the things in the world that we encounter. What we learned about this is a ball, this is a lamp, this is a car. We learn all these things. But here's an interesting fact. Every time we learn something new, unbeknownst to us, we also give it a value of how it relates to our survival. So that, like you look at some food, you say, yes, this is good, this is going to help me, and I will... This is a perception. This is an apple. This is good for me. And so I would have a tendency to go to an apple if I see one because I know it's good for me. In contrast, I look at these are rat poison pellets. I don't think I should eat those. Why? Because those are poisonous. So if I ever see them again, I avoid them. okay? So as I'm learning about all the things in life, I give it a value. And here's what we find. When we give something a value that is good for us and helpful to our survival, then whenever we see that thing or experience that stimulus, we are motivated to go to it because it enhances our life. It could be physical things like an apple, or more important things that are not tangible like love. That love is a perception, and when you know it, you will run to it because it's so healthy to be there, okay? In contrast, when we see things that are negative and threatening, then we learn if we ever encounter those things that we should protect ourselves, okay? So one set of things we see gives us growth. Those are the things we want to go to. So any stimulus that gives us growth, we move to it with open arms. The simple reason is, meaning open arms, to take it in. Be it an apple or love, you want to take it into your life, so you go get it and take it in. But in contrast, if there is a, let's say, a rattlesnake, I'm not going to run to the rattlesnake with my arms open. What my intention would be is to go the other way from the rattlesnake and protect myself and put something between me and the rattlesnake to protect myself. The difference between those two is growth stimuli, or things that we perceive to be related to growth, we move to with open arms. Stimuli that threaten us, we move away from with closed arms. And they're completely opposite movements. Now, there are some stimuli that offer neither growth nor protection. They're neutral. So I usually in the lecture talk about like elevator music. You get in the elevator, and the music is playing. Well, it's not going to kill you, and it's not going to make you dance. But you're somewhere in the middle. It's just neutral. So now I say, when we were young, and we started to experience life, we attached a value of survival to every stimulus so that when it showed up in our world, if it was something we perceived that gives us growth, we move to it. If we perceive something that threatens us, we move away from it and close ourselves down. And the two are opposite behaviors. Growth is maintenance and taking care of yourself and, you know, eating and managing your body's systems and just being in a healthy state. Protection has nothing to do with that. Protection means wall yourself off or get ready for fight and flight. Totally different than growth. And as we mentioned earlier, protection and growth are mutually exclusive. As I said, growth stimuli cause you to move to it. Protection stimuli cause you to move away from the stimulus. If I'm looking at a cell, I put nutrients in front of it, the cell moves to the nutrients. If I put toxins in front of it, the cell moves away from the toxin. What's the point? A cell cannot move forwards or and backwards at the same time. Point. A cell can be in growth or a cell can be in protection, but it can't be in both because they're mutually exclusive. You know, growth moving to something, protection moving away from something. You can't do both at the same time. You can't be open, as in growth, or closed at protection at the same time. What's the point? When we respond to the stimuli in our world, we respond to them based on how we learned about these stimuli. And the stimuli can cause us to open ourselves and be in growth and allow our system to heal and maintain itself. Or a stimulus could cause us to protect ourselves, close ourselves down, and wall ourselves off from the world. And then, of course, the big issue is, but what if you mislearn a perception? Then that means every time after you learn that perception, even if you learned it wrong, that means you're going to make the wrong response. And any time you ever see that perception come back in your life because you've learned it, you will automatically make the wrong response. And therefore, that takes us back again to that conscious parenting, where we realize that parents are the ones that shape our perceptions. I'll give you a simple last example to close it out. Let's say I'm an infant and my mother's taking me across the backyard and a snake slithers by and my mother sees the snake, screams her bloody head off, grabs me, yanks me, pulls me into the house, okay? And that was my first experience. And I say, that's a snake, and run like hell when you see it. That's my learning, okay? Meanwhile, the snake slithers across the backyard, goes into the neighbor's yard. And there's an infant, same age as I am, with its mother, but its mother is a herpetologist. and looks at the snake and says, oh, look at this pretty garden snake. Picks up the snake, hands it to the infant, and the kid is holding onto the snake and smiling and laughing because it's so much fun and enjoying the whole thing. What happened then is I acquired a perception of snake that says, you see a snake, you run and be afraid. My neighbor acquires a perception of a snake and says, not all snakes are dangerous. Matter of fact, this is kind of a nice snake. Let's like this snake. Same stimulus, totally different responses. Significance is that we acquire how we respond to the stimuli in our world from our parents, and if they are doing it inappropriately, unbeknownst to us, we were already programmed with that, and unbeknownst to us, 95% of the day, we would respond with that program that would be not supportive.
So could cells that are in growth mode get sick?
Oh, absolutely, because all I have to do is scare them enough that they get into the protection mode because they're afraid, and if I don't release the fear, then that will actually cause them to die. And in fact, there's a truth statement. It goes like this. You can be scared to death. That's a fact. That if you get so afraid, you will shut down yourself so much that you actually will cause your life to stop. So the issues are learning to live in the world with perceptions that are not fear-based.
All right. Thank you so much. That's just awesome. It's wonderful to hear you and have you share that on our program. And
well, I just love it because it's the listeners out there that are going to make a decision at some point like I did and say, what is this new science? And if it's my option, do I have a choice to live in fear or to live in love? And I can only tell you from my personal experience as a student behind that, when I learned the fact about the love, the community, the harmony, then the harmony that I started to create in my external world was completely replicated by the cells in my internal world. And therefore, once I started living in harmony with the world, my health started to become in harmony with the world as well.
It's that first thing you talked about, Bruce, that we don't have to be a victim anymore.
Absolutely. But we have to be careful because, as I said, until we're unaware of those programs that cause us to make the wrong responses to stimuli. Here's a very interesting point. There's a cardiovascular surgeon by the name of Dean Ornish. Maybe a lot of people have heard about him. He's written a book about his work. Well, most cardiologists, when people have cardiac problems, prescribe all these drugs, lower the blood pressure, lower the cholesterol, whatever those things are. Dean Ornish said, rather than trying to chemically change these people, what if I took these people that are having cardiovascular problems and taught them how to deal with stress? I teach them how to do better nutrition in their lives. I give them better social skills. I give them some exercise programs. What he basically did is he said, rather than changing the body, change the way you are driving your body. Just like I told you about the clutch story. I teach the person how to drive with a clutch, the vehicle lasts longer. He took people and said, you're driving your body with so much stress that you're damaging your heart, that rather than the drugs which other doctors were giving, thinking, well, you've got a bad heart, let's just put chemicals in there and maintain the heart. He said, let's don't put the chemicals in there. Let's train you as the driver of this vehicle to drive with a different conscientious manner. Here's the beautiful results. Not only did cardiovascular degeneration stop in his patients actually showed the ability that they regenerated their cardiovascular system. Relevant? All doctors generally give medications. And I saw Dean Ornish on a television show where he was very upset because he said, if I got the same results with a drug, every doctor in the world would be prescribing that drug right now. Mm-hmm. But he said, I didn't do it with drugs. We did it by changing lifestyle. And nobody, in the sense of the health, you know, business, was interested in doing that because that wasn't the storyline. They were there to sell drugs. And he showed the drugs never brought regeneration. The drugs barely stopped the degeneration. And what he showed was without drugs, people were able to engage their own innate healing systems and return their heart back to a healthier state, which was not seen and is not seen in any drug regimen treatment of cardiovascular disease.
Wow.
Yeah. And it says, what does that mean? Take your power back. Learn how to drive the vehicle better, and it will last you a lot more mileage than anybody ever anticipated.
That's fantastic. Let's give some of these wonderful people, Bruce, from around the world an opportunity to ask a question. And Don, if we can have, if we can start that up.
Okay. Let's see. Kevin, are you our operator tonight?
That's correct.
Okay, good. Would you please tell people how to get into the queue? And while you're doing that and getting the first name, then I'll come back and give the website addresses again.
All right. At this time, if you have a question, please press the number 1 on your touchtone phone. Only press the number 1 once. If you press it twice, it will remove you from the queue. And the questions will be answered in the order that they are received.
And also, I'd like to point out, we don't have Dr. Bruce Lipton with us often. So these are questions that should be addressed to Bruce, not to Alex and Ben. They're boring. We get to see them all the time.
Absolutely.
But they've got some wonderful answers.
Yeah, they do.
hear our answers.
We'll get to those another time. So everyone, please address your questions to Bruce. And again, his website address is www.BruceLipton.com. www.BruceLipton.com. The book is Biology of Belief. There are all kinds of different things there for you. You'll enjoy them. And as soon as we can get it up, probably the first of the year, we'll have a transcript available that you can download at no charge in an MP3 file you can listen to that will be at www.thehealingcode.com/Bruce or /Lipton. We're going to put it up on two separate pages to make it easier for you to remember. Now, Alex, remind me where I put those. And Kevin, do we have our first questioner, please?
Yes, we do. Our first question will come from Paul. Paul, go ahead with your question.
Good evening. How about Dr. Bruce? Does that work?
Bruce is good.
Bruce, well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed the talk this evening. I was actually on the call last night for the Healing Codes, and that was the first time I was there and saw you were going to be present and didn't know the treat I was in for, so thank you again.
I appreciate you listening, Paul. Thank you.
My question for you regarding the positive thinking, which with the self-help and everything we're trying to do for ourselves to better our lives and realizing how we're essentially stalling ourselves, is it your opinion with this information that it is necessary that we are programming ourselves while we are asleep, when we're in that state where we are able to somewhat program the subconscious mind, or is there another way for us to allow ourselves to program the positive thoughts into our subconscious thinking?
Well, there's a whole variety of modalities, and I'll just list them by a category, okay? And yet, there's no special thing that I want to talk about, and you're already dealing with healing codes to some level, so I really want to leave them that option to talk about it. But I will give three basic ways. One of them is Buddhist mindfulness, meaning that if you're conscious all the time, then there's a tendency not to play the tapes. And if you're conscious all the time, you got your hands on the wheel, and you can make it go where you want it to go. And have you ever been conscious? It takes a bit of effort to do that because there's so many pressures on our day-to-day life that it's hard to keep your conscious focus because there's always our mind is tending to wander. The moment it wanders, then it automatically means you're playing the subconscious tapes. But if you can get a grasp on it and you stay conscious, you absolutely have the ability to make your vehicle go and do what you want it to do. You're not relying on the tapes. Number two, clinical hypnosis. An ability that actually takes you back to the same learning state that you were in before six, takes you into those delta theta zones and allows a rewriting of a program that you may have miswritten the first time by observing somebody with, you know, that wasn't using good program. And the last is a variety of modalities, including healing codes. Excuse me. A variety of modalities collectively called energy psychology, which are ways of reprogramming the subconscious mind. an interesting aspect about this so that people know this right away. The conscious mind and the subconscious mind are separate entities. The conscious mind has your alert awareness, your identity, your spiritual connection. The subconscious mind is a tape player. Relevance. Just because your conscious mind becomes aware of something, in no way does that change the tape in the subconscious. So when I started, I was saying, hey, with all this awareness, I was out giving all these lectures about how this new science could create wonderful life. And while I was doing that for my conscious mind, my life was still being run by my subconscious. And that's what the people in the audience realized and said, well, your conscious mind is giving me this information. Your expression of your life doesn't match. And the point was, oh, yeah, because it comes from the subconscious mind. And this is very critical because there's a general belief that if you become, if you become conscious of something, that you will automatically have changed your behavior. And the point is, no, the subconscious mind is, again, tape player. Point why I bring that out is, listen to this. I give you a tape, you put it in your tape machine, you push the play button, the program is playing, you don't like the program, so you go up to the tape player and try to have a conversation with it. And then after a while you realize tape is still playing the same program, and then you get mad, and then you start yelling at the tape player. And then there's a point where you realize even the tape player is not listening to you, then you beseech God to come in and please change this tape. And the point is this, simple point. How much talking or yelling at the tape is going to cause the tape to change the program? And the answer is, you will never change the program unless you push the record button. And so there are varieties of ways, including healing codes, of how you can access the record button and put in a different program. But my point that people should understand is, just because you became aware does not change the tape, because you're aware in your conscious mind, the subconscious mind is recorded history. And so I want people to recognize that, because it requires a process to change the subconscious mind, not just, oh, okay, let's just change it. It's like, that didn't do anything. So I want people to know that, because you can powerfully use it, but if you're unaware of it, it is very frustrating, because there's a tendency to think that you can talk yourself into another tape by just talking to yourself, and the fact is, it's not going to happen that way.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you.
Our next question.
Before we get to our next question, I want to give this just a second. Bruce, do you need to go get a glass of water or anything?
I just take a sip while the next question is happening. I got a glass right here, and I'm very apologetic about that. But
not a problem.
It'll be gone.
Anyway, while he's getting the next question up, we'll let you get a glass of water.
I got it.
And I'll give the website address again. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Kevin, go ahead.
All right. Our next question will come from Evie. Go ahead, Evie, with your question.
Dr. Lipton, you're
Bruce,
brilliant.
Yes.
Thank you. My question is, with what you presented, it struck something in me, a thought that what was written, it's called the sins of the parents shall follow the children. And I'm not religious. I am a Buddhist, so in that respect. But I believe that if I'm understanding what you're saying, that these particular sins shall follow the children actually refers to dysfunctional behaviors that are then programmed into the cellular memory. Is that correct?
It's not cellular memory. It's into the subconscious memory. It's into the memory base. That's the central voice that communicates to all of the cells. So yes, a story is programmed into that. And interestingly enough, the programming starts in utero first with the emotions and organizing chemicals in the mother's blood that cross the placenta. So if the mother is in a state of distress, the signals of distress that coordinate the functions and organize her body to respond to them cross into the placenta as well. The child experiences everything the mother is experiencing. If the father screws up and it changes the mother's concern about life, then the fetus is immediately affected by this as well, and the chemistry will actually change the genetics of the child as the child tries to adopt to the world. So that even this, for a child that was conceived unwanted in the sense that it wasn't a planned pregnancy, and then the parents are now a little bit concerned, like, oh, we shouldn't have this child. Oh, my God, how can we afford this? And the life looks bleak and all that. That rejection is chemically already understood by the child. And the relevance about these things is that our perceptions, our beliefs, our emotions, as we experience them as adults, are passed on to this child even before it's born and becomes part of that child's subconscious automatic programming that that child will express when it grows up, whether it observes it or not, and pass it on to the next generation. If a child is abused by its parent, there's a very high probability that when that child grows up, it will abuse its child, which again passes on. And why is that relevant? Behavior passes from parent to child in the same way that genes are passed from parent to child.
But in essence, unlike a tape player where you actually create a tape and you can listen to the tape, in this particular case, if I'm understanding you correctly, this particular tape that we play also attract to itself exactly what's playing.
Absolutely, because if I put out a behavior that is like a skewed behavior, the only person that could be balanced with me is somebody whose behavior is as skewed or complements my skewed behavior, and as a result, we start making these like codependent relationships that balance out to some degree, except they will always fail because no one is complete or whole in that relationship. And these are changeable. So the fact is, yes, we were all programmed. Yes, a lot of us got programs that are not supporting our vitality and our health. And yes, we can change those programs. So we are not, while we can't change the genes, we can change the behavioral programs we acquired.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Edie. Just one interesting point is this is like a little sidelight. We frequently talk about the subconscious as like the font of evil. Always talk about the dark things come from the subconscious. And the subconscious is a tape player. Dark things come from it if dark things are programmed into it. Here's the interesting thing. While we've always looked at the negative side of the subconscious, let me give you the positive side. If, in fact, I was a child from a family who was spiritual, lived in harmony with the planet, lived in love with each other, always engaged in win-win behaviors, and carried this out as a way of life, and I was an infant in that family, that would be my download in my subconscious. Point, I could be essentially unconscious my whole life, and that subconscious program would take me to the top of the pile even if I wasn't paying any attention. The point is that the subconscious has no positive or negative. It's a tape player. What is positive or negative are the programs that go into it.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I really appreciate what you said. So then, in essence, you can rewrite. I totally understand what you're saying. I totally agree with that. As far as Buddhist mindfulness, I understand. But to rewrite it, how effective is the rewrite?
Well, there are processes, again, so there are, you know, mantras in some way, there are just habit. How you got anything in the subconscious mind because it's been repeated. If you start and engage in a habit, you can reprogram via habit reprogramming, but it's a lot easier to get support from your mind and your spirit as well. It'll facilitate these changes a lot faster. And I want other people to know that aren't Buddhists, that they, most of them have experienced Buddhist mindfulness, and I can almost tell them when. And that was that when you met that person that lit up your life. The first time you met this person that lit up your life, all of a sudden your life changed in an important way. Because when you were trying to date or meet this person and set up a relationship, for the first time in your life, you were almost conscious all of the time. The day before you met this person, it took 5 minutes to eat, 5 minutes to get dressed. You meet this person, you're going to go out and get dressed, and you're going to go eat with them. I can sure as heck tell you it took a lot longer than 5 minutes to go out and get dressed and a lot longer than 5 minutes to eat your dinner. Because when you started to observe yourself, to make yourself presentable to this other person, you didn't rely on subconscious tapes. You were very self-observant, which is self-conscious. You were looking at yourself. So you didn't rely on the tape. And if you go back, you will also find that most likely that honeymoon period with this mate was some of the most wonderful and happy times you had. And the interesting fact was, yes, you were living from consciousness and you were not relying on the tapes. The honeymoon ends when life gets so busy that your consciousness can't keep that focus on itself, and it starts to wander off to the job or the bank account or wherever it is. And when consciousness is thinking about, well, geez, do I have enough money to make it, then you're running from the subconscious, and all of a sudden you will start playing tapes that your partner never saw before. Mm-hmm. And that's when the honeymoon gets a little bit shaky, because they say, well, where did that behavior come from? The answer was, it was always there, but since I was operating from consciousness, I didn't rely on the tape. And once my mind got busy, then the tape started to play, and guess what? You saw behaviors that even I don't see, and that's where the problems come from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much. I will definitely work on that, and I'm very interested in the healing codes. My roommate and I are definitely going to order that.
Well, it's just wonderful, because you get an opportunity to take power back over your life. You and we have to let go of the victimization, because we buy into it. So as you're doing that, also remember, you're not susceptible to the bird flu unless you want to be. I was just trying that out. So, yeah, that's a belief system, and you can work on those things. And so
amen.
Get your power.
It's what you agree to, in other words.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin?
Right. Our next question will come from Fran. Fran, go ahead with your question.
Thank you so much, Bruce, for your enlightenment here tonight. I'm wondering if you would be able to give us a correlation between your 35 years of research and its impact or its relationship to the healing codes?
My thing is a whole independent thing, and this is really why it works very nicely with the healing codes, because basically we're all getting down to the same understanding that that we are removing ourselves from the character of a biochemical automaton and putting ourselves into the level of an opportunity where our spiritual and our beliefs and our identity can actually take control of this mechanism and run it back. So I don't have direct correlations, but that's because we've never sat down and mapped them out. So I would love to expand on that. It's just not something I can at this very moment, Fran, but I know it could all come together very well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your question.
Our next question will come from Tony. Tony, go ahead with your question.
Yes, what I'm wondering is I've been concerned about my life as far as memory. Can I have an effect on that in some way? In other words, what I believe.
Okay, I'm not sure of the question. Can you have an effect on what part? You're losing memory or what?
No, my wife's.
Your wife's memory?
Yeah.
Ah, and the issue is, not really. And the reason why is that we're each independent people. Now, you can have an influence if she's open to having an influence, okay? Uh-huh. And this is why a healer can help a person, but the patient has to be open to the healing. If the person isn't open to the healing, it's not going to work. So I even go back to, you know, the concept of Jesus. Before he even said I would start to do a healing, he said you had to be open to the healing. If you think you can, you know, if you have faith that you can be healed, then we can do this process. So in a very interesting similarity, if that person wasn't open, then even Jesus wasn't going to be able to make that, you know, that help go through that. So the issue is, if your wife is in harmony with this concept, then both of you can work together. And in fact, have a very profound difference. But if she is closed, then there's a problem where it's a dicey game at that point.
Right.
And this is a very difficult problem for almost everyone in this audience for this reason, because we know a lot of people, we think, oh, my God, if I could just help that person. And you go and you do all your efforts to do everything for this person. And if they weren't ready, then actually nothing happens.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I have any problem with that part.
Well, that part, then, yes, then both of you can get together, because the fact is that working together is very important to identify the behaviors when you remember I said that most of the behaviors come from the subconscious mind, the person doesn't see it?
Right.
If two people in a couple relationship could understand this, then it's very interesting, because the things that generally lead to arguments and a split up of couples are things that are just programs that the person is playing, and they themselves, and playing it, don't even know they're doing it and creating a problem. And then when being called on it, then they usually feel like now they're being personally attacked, and that's when all of a sudden the dialogue really breaks down. If two people know that they have these tapes, that they play and they don't see them playing, and they have an agreement, and it's very important, so my partner and I have the same understanding, and it's very beautiful, that all of a sudden if a behavior comes out that obviously it was just like a stimulus response push button, and it was a very, you know, not a very supportive behavior, when it's brought to light, it all of a sudden loses the power. And the person could start to say, oh, my, I didn't really mean to say that. And all of a sudden there's an option to keep correcting it. So when it shows up, it's like, oh, there's that behavior, that it can immediately, the person's consciousness can stop the thing right there if they're aware that it's happening. But as I said, most people play the behaviors that are not very supportive and are unaware that they're playing it, so they never see what's going on. And that generally makes situations worse and worse because nobody's being conscious of that it's being that it's, these tapes are playing in the first place. So I think you have a, especially if you have a partner that's really willing, then that's the best thing in the world, and that's why coupling is very important, because a person does not generally see their own behavior when they're looking out their own eyes.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question will come from Judy. Judy, go ahead with your question.
I apologize. It's been so marvelous. I think you've pretty much answered a lot of my questions, but I just wanted to find out if we have something going on here that's like the chicken before the egg, where the programming and the reprogramming and so on I can't even express myself at the end of a long day, but just I was wondering if the
let me try this and see if we were working on the same line. That if you got programmed correctly the first time, you wouldn't need the reprogramming. And that the issue about programming correctly in the first time is having an awareness about life and how to live in harmony and in love as parents before having children, and changing those behaviors that are the automatic subconscious ones that you don't see. Because even if you don't see them, the child is downloading them, so that the nature of this is why the conscious parenting becomes important, because if we correct our own program so that whatever we're doing unconsciously is actually a win-win situation, then a child will automatically be programmed with win-win situation automatic behaviors after that. Is that chicken and egg or not?
Yeah, so I was actually thinking about something else.
Oh, well, please, I was taking a wild leap on that.
No. I really appreciate that. I was just trying to think how trying to correct this type of programming in oneself.
Yes.
Kind of leads to, like, brings up self-sabotaging behaviors.
In trying to correct it, it leads to self-sabotaging behaviors?
Right, because the programming is still going on, even though the...
This is then where the consciousness becomes very important to observe the programming and consciously decide. This is what the beautiful part about the conscious mind. It's a small piece of processing information compared to the subconscious mind. But it's powerful enough to grab the wheel and take control of the vehicle if it doesn't like the way it's going. But then if the conscious mind loses its focus, then you automatically are going to go back to that tape. So the issue is, there won't be a tendency to self-sabotage as you become more self-observant and listening to your thoughts that are going through your head and adjusting them with like this is an active process. I was thinking, that wouldn't work. And I was thinking, well, that's really not a very supportive thought, because if you already negated something you were looking for before it appears, then you are actually creating a program to make sure you won't get it. And so there are issues where if your conscious mind is doing this, it can override the self-sabotaging character to it, to the extent that you can reprogram these behaviors, and then after you reprogram it to work with you, then when you're not even paying attention, at least the program is supporting you. And these options are available. They do occur. They occur quite frequently, in fact.
Just by being a little bit more focused.
Absolutely, an intention of where you want to go. Intention is the big driver. Mm-hmm. If you don't engage the intention to make it active, then you're living in wishes. And wishes are nice ideas, but if there's no motivation behind it, put the intention to make it happen. That's the difference of the reality and the wish. The reality is, this is what I want, and I will make an active process to get there. Then you can get there.
I was just wondering, because it's been, I'm 58 years old, and I've been wanting and searching and wanting to change my programming, and I've been intellectually aware of the past programming and intellectually aware of the focusing that I need to do. I just haven't, at this point, brought it actually about.
Well, yeah, and that's because I said there was a point where there are processes to push that record button.
Right.
Otherwise, you're talking and the tape is still playing and nobody's communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big discouraging part, because the consciousness is seemingly trying to make an effort and yet it doesn't go anywhere. And that's because if you don't do a process, then you're really just hoping that if you keep talking to that tape that someday it will decide to change. And it's like, no, it will never change by itself.
Right.
So it takes it from an intention and desire to put it into action, and that is exactly what happened as I even, you know, introduced my talk. I had all the knowledge, but it wasn't in my tapes.
Gotcha.
And it was and once I changed it, but here's the heartening part. It is the most wonderful experience you can ever imagine, is to put the tape into a situation that brings you the things that you really want to experience in this life, not the things that other people programmed you to respond to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can manifest essentially heaven on this planet.
Wow.
In this process, because you can create what you want.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Oh, fascinating. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening.
Our next question will come from Linda. Go ahead, Linda, with your question.
Hi. Well, I guess I'm going to call you Bruce because
yeah,
cool. You're so insistent.
I like that. Yeah, it's like I'm here.
Wonderful. Well, I have bought 4 of your books so far. I'm talking about Biology of Belief.
I'm so glad. I hope you laughed through it, too. Did you laugh when you read it?
Absolutely. I have. What it has done is it has engaged me so much that I'm consciously unconscious of absolutely paying attention to everything you've done. I don't even understand that statement.
Well,
I hope you do.
It sounds like, yes, you were involved with reading the book.
I'll say. And I'm an NLP trainer. I'm hoping to get involved in doing some training for the codes as well, the healing codes. I think this is every technique that a person can have that can help with the programming is so important.
It's a toolbox. I believe you very much that the better your tools, the better the construction job.
That's it. And in NLP we say, if what you're doing isn't working, try something else, anything else. And that leads to, of course, trial and error. But I think that everyone, at least listening into this call, is so intelligent. I have a question about hypnosis.
Yes.
I'm also a trainer in hypnotherapy. We talk a lot about the critical factor, or the, you know, it's that voice inside that goes, oh, you can't possibly do that. Now, that's part of the programming. Do you talk about that at all? I mean, are you entertained at all about that third element?
Well, I don't think it's a third element. I think that is a subconscious programming of limitation.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
And it's unfortunate, because these are these very kind of things that children hear about when they dream that the world is open and they can have everything. The parents are there to bring them reality, saying no. And it's unfortunate, because the no is the actual limitation that prevents them from going anywhere. And
mm-hmm.
that is the response that comes from the subconscious mind that has been programmed with self-sabotaging or limiting beliefs. To make those statements like, well, I don't think it's going to happen. That's just a playback of an expectation that you don't feel you're good enough or worthy enough of things to happen. And so when you think of, oh, I would love to see this happen, the tape will automatically come up and say, I don't think so. And the fact is, that's just coming from the tape that says, listen, this is the program. And unless you change the tape, I don't think so. That's basically what the results are.
Precisely, and the bottom line is limiting beliefs.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the limiting beliefs are beliefs. And then, you know, in whatever spiritual tradition you're coming from, basically they all come down to the bottom line saying it's your beliefs that control your life. And now at least the science is finally coming to the realization that these beliefs do interface the biology that we have and shape it so that we become shaped by genes to a certain degree and shaped very profoundly by the beliefs we acquire starting in utero.
I have a sidebar to tell you that's very funny. I was training in Turkey, and I had two delegates in the training that were both medical doctors. And I found one of your articles that had been translated fortuitously into Turkish, and I had been told that they were problematical because they were very, very much in the old science, and they had given everybody, their trainers before, a hard time. So I presented this article of yours, and I gave them homework. They had to read it. They never gave me a moment of problems after that.
Well, I'm glad. That's two things now. One, A, the concepts worked, and B, that the Turkish translation made sense because I had no idea about it. So that's fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Our next question will come from Judy S.
Yes, thank you very much, Bruce. I appreciate you, and I appreciate all that you've written, too.
I thank you for reading it, Judy.
You're very welcome. Here's my question. I'd like you to explain, from your perception, how you see positive thinking being different from prayer. And I'm particularly interested in affirmative prayer. I don't know if you're familiar with affirmative prayer that is taught by the Church of Religious Science.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little bit different version of prayer than beseeching God to help me or something like that. So if you could speak to that, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I'm hoping, if I'm right on this affirmative prayer, is to really be more in gratitude, right, or not?
Yes, it's a five-step prayer system, and gratitude is definitely one of those steps. It's asking for what you want as though it had already happened. And you had spoken about the Bible earlier, but in the Bible it also says, pray believing that you already have this.
Absolutely. And
so it's the same concept.
It's a very important reason for this. If I pray that I want something,
mm-hmm.
then I'm in a stage of want.
Right.
And I'm not praying that I got it. I'm praying that I want it. And
mm-hmm.
I could stay in want between now and the next millennium.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reality is, if I pray, I want this thing, if I get it, then I no longer want it, but the prayer was in want, and the prayer wasn't in have. And it's the words are so precisely critical because we just don't understand it, and that's why when we pray from weakness, we're really, you know, acknowledging first the weakness, and that's where the problem came from. What if we weren't weak? And yet if I claim I'm weak and then I'm asking God to fix weakness, it's like I am working on fixing. Again, fixing weakness is not being well. Fixing weakness is that you're weak and you're going to be fixing it. Being well is being well. So the words become very important. If you really have to go like it's already here and you're thanking God for it, then
mm-hmm.
then it's here. And it's funny because, again, I wasn't raised in that tradition, and it was one of the apostles, Paul. I'm the last guy to know this, okay? But apparently after the crucifixion, he went to this city, and he had people believe that the kingdom of heaven was here now. And he didn't say, so it wasn't like, let's wait for the kingdom of heaven. He said, let's have it now.
Mm-hmm.
And the people lived in the moment of now and actually had that experience. while the other people in other places were waiting for that experience. If I pray while I'm waiting for it, then I'm waiting for this means I don't want it. I really want the waiting. And this is like, when people want to cure themselves of cancer, you can't say, I'm curing myself of cancer, because that didn't say you're cured. That you're always in the process of getting to the end. You're not at the end. So the point is, a prayer must already express the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you express the desire to get to the end, you will experience forever the desire to get to the end.
Right. And that's how I feel also. Now, how do you see what you just talked about as different from positive thinking? I'm looking for your definition.
Okay,
of
well, the positive thinking is all I have to do is just focus on this right now. And the idea is, well, that's really nice, but in my positive thinking, I'm hoping that this event's going to occur without dealing with this other issue. When I already put out the belief that I have what I have, if my subconscious mind it doesn't have that image, and I'm putting out, I already have what I have, the subconscious mind at some point is going to have to adopt to the fact that this is what we have, not, again, the path of waiting to get there or interfering with it. It's a very different thing. It has an intentional difference behind it. And it's really putting out a very positive prayer, not a prayer from weakness. Positive thinking is somewhat like it, and it's very hard now that I'm making a lot of words. I'm having a more difficult time finding the sharp border that I would like to find between those two. Okay?
Yes.
But it's really intention that has to happen, and the field, putting it out to the field is very important as much as the magnetic field shape the iron filings. Our thought field shape our cells. Our cells are like iron filings in a thought field. Our thoughts then manifest a physical field that becomes our biology.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a better answer, and I'm really trying to stay above water on it right now.
Well, what I got from you is the key word was intention.
Yes.
The key word was intention. And I just make one other comment along with the Buddhist mindfulness.
Yes.
The work of Eckhart Tolle on the power of now.
Yes, absolutely.
Is also along that general line.
Absolutely, be here now. That's the old hippie phrase kind of thing, and yet it's really true because most people are thinking about some place that doesn't exist, spend their life thinking about it, and then realize that their life has passed by and they never experienced it
mm-hmm.
here because it's always down the road somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it's living the moment of now. That's all we have is the moment of now.
Right.
And the part is when you do use the conscious side of the mind and do not try to rely on the subconscious mind, then in the moment of now, you have your hands on the wheel and you're driving, and it's your choice. And that's the nature of life. It's your mm-hmm. choice.
Yes. Thank you so much, Bruce.
Thank you.
And
Bruce, I want to step in here, and we've been allowing you to talk for 2 hours and 45 minutes now, which is...
Oh, that's a long time.
It's a while, and even though I want to take you up on your 12-hour offer...
Yeah, we have people that are probably saying, please let me go to bed now, okay?
I don't think we should do it tonight.
Yeah.
But we do want to have you back again sometime and continue this. It's been absolutely fascinating. We will allow just one more call, and then we'll have everyone come on, say goodnight, et cetera. But first... Alex, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No. That's exactly where I was going, Don. We're coming up to midnight on our East Coast people, and we need to let people get in bed.
Okay,
I agree with that.
Anyway, so one more quick question. I'll give the address again. We'll open up the lines for everyone to say goodnight, and then we're gone, and everyone have a wonderful Christmas. Again, we'll be back here next Wednesday with recordings, and we'll have this available probably right after the first of the year, is a transcript in an MP3 file. Kevin, if you will, take a last question.
All right. Our last question will come from Mary. Go ahead, Mary, with your question.
All right. I have read that there are no stem cells in the brain. I had a stroke over 3.5 years ago, which affected the performance of my left leg. I can walk with a walker. And I have really a strong desire to walk normally again, and
mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if I can hope that even the codes would help, since the immune system probably would not be able to help the brain.
Well, the answer about that is very critical, and that is that you indeed can repair the damage, and that even if it doesn't go up to the brain, the walking part, and this is a real interesting experiment, they found that when a person's spinal cord got severed and they lost their ability to walk, that by making the legs go through the motion of walking, that the spinal cord learned without even the brain. That it learned in the spinal cord, a person who had a severed spinal cord was able to walk again, and other people now they've done experiments like this, and they find that if you put the pattern in by making the movement the way you want it to move, if you continue putting the pattern in, the cells will actually learn how to make reflexes to create that pattern exactly for you. So the fact is that part of it was sort of like a passive process where these people which had the spinal cord severed, their feet were like put into to these blocks that would like move them in a stride, and the feedback from the movement reprogrammed the cells in the spinal cord, and they were able to walk even though their spinal cord was disconnected from their brain still.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. That gives me a tremendous hope, and thank
there,
you so much.
There is, and I think that is even on one of my references on the website about nervous system under the category of nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
On my references, I give a reference to a paper, and there's generally a little sentence in parentheses that give the subject of the paper so you can get to the topic.
I'll have a wonderful Christmas just having heard that.
Well, I want you to know that the belief system about brain and regeneration has been changing.
Oh,
and that when I used to teach in medical school, of course, we taught that the brain was one thing that never regenerated.
Yes,
and
yes.
Now we're finding that is not a true statement.
Oh.
And it's very important, because if you believe you can't regenerate, you will not regenerate.
Oh, I see. Well, that is really good news.
That's why if you just check this paper, it was an easy paper, Why Is It Relevant? A person whose spinal cord was actually severed from the brain could learn how to walk.
Mm-hmm. So I go to your website?
Yes, and I think it's under references, under the reference section, it's under the categories, and I think it was nervous system or something like that.
Oh, that's wonderful. I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
And if we had to take a last call or question, that was a great question to go out on. I'm very glad we got to cover that one. Once again, the website address is www.brucelipton, is in LiptonT.com. That's B is Ben, would you do that? Spell it your way.
L as in Lima, I as in Indigo.
No, do the whole thing. Bruce.
P as in Papa, T as in Tango, O as in Oscar, M as in Mama.
No, it's Lipton with an N.
With an N.
Oh,
like
N as in November, I'm sorry.
Ben,
no,
you're fired.
We don't spell it. Just say Bruce Lipton.
Got it. And once again, we'll have a PDF and an MP3 file available definitely by the first of the year. We've got to get a transcript done, and we may have it done faster than that, and that will be available at thehealingcode.com/Bruce or /Lipton, as in Lipton T. And Kevin, would you open it? Does anyone have anything else before we open the lines?
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you all
very much for this opportunity, and thank you to everybody who stayed up very late. But I hope when you go to bed tonight, you just see it that you are more powerful than the conventional world has led you to believe.
And now, Kevin, would you open the line and everyone come on and say thank you to Alex, Ben, and Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Happy holidays.
Thanks a lot.
That's America.
Oh, have a good day now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Email Dr. Lipton. Thank you.
And that is the call for tonight.
Can we email Dr.
Thank you all. And whoever was saying about email to Dr. Lipton, go to his website and you can probably find it there. Kevin, would you close the call for this evening?
Certainly. This officially ends the call.
Thank you.